So wait a minute. You left that in a studio?
Yeah. I left my wallet in the Tigers postgame studio the other day.
It's one of the backup studios we have here.
Of the backup studios. I left it there. All right.
When did you realize that you left it?
I didn't.
You didn't?
I didn't. So I was carrying on for 2 hours. Didn't even realize it.
So you had left the building.
No. I'm in the building working.
Okay.
But I'm working on something else. And this is sitting there. My wallet is sitting there in the side studio, Tigers postgame studio. And the cleaning crew gave it to Cheryl up front. Cheryl's the forward-facing first person you see when you walk in the door. Yep. And Cheryl brought it back to me. Absolutely nothing was missing within this. And I got to tell you, like I guess I've lost a lot of faith in society. I wouldn't expect to get this back in one piece. And I did. And now I'm flaunting it again, so I'm due to lose it again today.
I think in today's society, Ken, correct me if I'm wrong, but cameras are everywhere. And I think more and more people become aware. There's still people who are oblivious that cameras are everywhere. But because cameras are everywhere, I think some people are starting to realize.
Well, I hope that helps.
Yeah.
But
that the theft would go down. Or better yet, that there's, hey, where did I have this? And you know, maybe it can help as a tool to find things too.
Well, it's unfortunate because you'd want people just to be good in general without having to worry about, oh, am I on camera? You know, just out of, you know, the kindness and goodness of your heart that like this isn't mine, I'm going to return it. But yes, I think the camera thing does help a lot of people. But as I tell Doug all the time, criminals, they do dumb things because they're dumb.
Yeah.
And people still steal on camera. You know? So, but Mark, someone returned it. That's always a good thing, man.
Well, I felt like I did the dumb thing. Now, you find this, you're obviously returning it, right? If you're at a store and you find $20 on the ground, I don't return it.
No, I just found $20.
I just found $20.
Yeah.
Because the person I turn it into is just going to keep it. You drop $20, you've lost $20. Is that fair to say?
I think it's fair, but I mean, you start to make the question interesting. If you find just a money clip that's got like, you know, $600 there.
Where is the line?
You know, what's the number you're saying?
Everybody's got the price. At what point are you like, I probably should be responsible and maybe turn this into somebody
who is then going to keep the money clip?
Maybe.
Right?
But I mean, at some point you're like, what am I supposed to do here? I got a real moral dilemma.
I'll go, if it's at work, any amount of money I'm turning in. If it's at the store, $100 or less is mine.
Hey, he's got a number.
What if you're in a parking lot of just like a strip mall and you have no idea which store it is? And then you come across somebody's money clip and it's like, you know, like I said, you have several hundred dollars in a money clip that's just lying on the ground.
You are asking a question that you're not answering. What would you do?
I'm asking a question first and I can offer my response. I'm not sure what I would do in that situation, because if it's a strip mall, I don't know where the store is. I would probably pick it up immediately and then look around and maybe palm it and say to somebody, hey, has anybody dropped anything? Anybody dropped something? Anybody? Like if there's anybody walking around. And if, you know, I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, I've got this.
What do you say real quietly though, right? Has anybody dropped anything?
Anybody.
But if it's a strip club, you just bring it right back in.
Well, yeah, it's just it's money well spent.
Yeah, right? Oh man,
it's been reused again.
I think we all understand that. Those are the rules of going to a strip club. You know, if you find some cash outside, you just go right back in and return it.
What amount of money would signal to you I've got to return this?
Oh,
just money. Wallet is an obvious. You're a punk if you don't return this.
Well, or at least seek out the person, because you've got information. You can, in today's day and age, you can track that person down easy enough if you've got the wallet and there's information to be had.
But cash doesn't have your name on it.
No, if it's just cash. I mean, if there's just a lot of cash on the ground, I don't know. It's almost like, is that a 3-second rule like food?
I thought it was a 10-second rule.
What are you supposed to do? I mean, it does depend on the. I mean, like if it's $5, it's $1, it's a $20 bill. It's just one bill. It could be a $100 bill, but if it's just a bill.
That's your bill.
Probably bending over, picking it up, and immediately looking around. Nobody's looking at me. Okay. And not that you're looking at it to steal, like looking like, hey, did I just drop something?
You find a money clip, it's got $250 in there. What are you doing?
I pick it up, I look around, and if there's nobody around to ask, then I'll stand there probably for, I'll probably give myself 10 seconds. I'm standing around.
Not 10 looking. Minutes.
No. No, not 10 minutes. I got my time. That's my time. And then I'll probably take it. Because I don't know where I'm supposed to return it to. I'm not going to the cops. Hey, I found this $250 wad of money outside the Kroger CVS.
What if you found $250,000?
That you got to turn in. Yeah. Something's up there.
Something's going on.
Yeah.
I'm not touching the $250,000. I'm walking right by it.
Oh, no. I got a chance nobody's going to claim
that. You
got
to turn it in because that person will give you some kind of reward. 100%. You turn in like $10,000 or more.
Unless it's a crack dealer.
No, that's, no, like, even then, no, that's exactly quiet. Right. You don't want anything to do with that stack.
They'll give you something. Don't worry.
I've seen too many movies.
They'll give you
something.
No,
you stay away from that. Breaking Bad. Okay, Breaking Bad.
Someone's going to track me down. Like, did you not see No Country for Old Men? I mean, there's a transponder there somewhere.
Yeah.
Anton Chigurh is going to be tracking me down. I don't need that.
Come on, man. Start a new life. You're single.
Look, the guy who found that money that Anton Chigurh was tracking down, he was married and trying to start a new life, and it did not end well for him or his wife or his mother-in-law. Sorry, spoiler alert.
I like No Country for Old Men. Very little CGI.
You know, Mark's, his policy on CGI in movies. Too much just, CGI, he's done. I'm out of here!
I like it. Weird. I like it a lot.
I watched a movie last night. Because the Tigers game ended so quickly. And that was a 2-hour and 4-minute game or something like that. I couldn't believe what I was... I'm like, it's 7:15 and they're in the fifth inning. Like, what? When did this game started at 6:40 and it's already in the going into the fifth inning. Crazy. It went so fast. And the movie The Machinist came on. And it's a movie from like 2005, I think. And it stars Christian Bale as a guy who works in a shop, and he has horrible insomnia where he has not slept in a year. And to buy into the role, Christian Bale dropped a significant amount of weight where he is completely emaciated. He looks incredibly unhealthy. His face is sunken. His ribs are bulging out of his body. I mean, he looks like he weighs 120 pounds, and I'm not exaggerating. And that's the second time he's done that for a movie. He did that for another movie called Rescue Dawn, which was, I think, a Vietnam movie. And it's kind of gross looking at it. It's like, oh, my God. It's shocking. But that's what – so the Tigers just flip in, and I'm watching this. And because of the conversation we've had about you not liking CGI movies, I'm watching this. I'm going, would Mark Ryan watch this movie – because he doesn't like to suspend disbelief.
No, I can't.
So the idea that somebody hasn't slept in a year, would you watch this movie?
That sounds interesting to me.
But it's impossible, right?
It's, yeah, you die. I'm pretty sure I would die if I didn't sleep for a year. The other thing is, how would you be willing to become emaciated if they're paying you $4 million for a movie? I wouldn't.
I mean, for me to get to that point, we're gonna need some time. But the interesting thing about this, the chronological order of like the movies he's done in his career, he did that right before he did Batman Begins.
And he's ripped
in
that one.
Yeah, he's like, well, he's I don't know if he's ripped, but he's big. He's like close to 200 pounds in Batman Begins. And it's interesting because at some point there's like a different part of a timeline in this movie. So you see him when he's almost back to his fighting weight of Batman Begins, which is clearly where he's building up to at the end of this movie shoot. But it's just wild. But no CGI there that I could tell.
Good. So. And an interesting concept, interesting storyline. What happened to him?
I don't want to blow the story. It is an interesting story. It's a very interesting story, an interesting movie. But it's visually, it's hard. It's a tough watch at times because of what he has done to his body and buying into the role. Anyway, that's just a little distractions to start the show. Tigers play last night against Pittsburgh. Pirates win it 4-1. They even the series up at a game apiece. They have the rubber match this afternoon. We've got a shorter show. The Tiger game will start at 1:10. Our broadcast coverage getting underway at 12:45. Interesting matchup today. On paper, it sounds interesting. Although the way the guys are pitching lately, maybe it's not. But Paul Skenes is going for the Pirates. They gave him an extra few days off to try to figure out what's going on with him because his velocity has dropped a couple miles an hour. He's just not the same pitcher at all. He's struggled with his control, and he's clearly frustrated. I mean, this is a guy who's the National League Cy Young Award winner from a year ago, was Rookie of the Year a couple years before that. I mean, he's incredible. And yet, he's going through some issues. Jackson Jobe is pitching for the Tigers, making his third start of the season. His first start was great, 5 shutout innings. His next start, not so much. They hit the White Sox really hit the ball hard against Jackson Jobe over the last weekend. But here's an opportunity to get back at it. The matchup is interesting. I'm curious about how the Tigers are feeling about how Tiger fans are feeling about this, because the team is continuing to do this. It's a roller coaster for this season. Look, you're not going to sweep every series, but when you struggle to score runs, people are going to question things, even though this team is scoring runs at a prodigious rate since June 1st. But last night was one of these games. They only got one. They only had 5 hits in the game. And Ashcraft was unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. Like he was the previous start. He was the same way this way. It was just unhittable, it seemed at times. But 248-539-9797 is a telephone number. Mark Ryan's in for Doug Carr. Sorry, forgot to mention that. Doug is dropping his youngest off at college today. It's going to be a very emotional day for Doug. He'll talk about it tomorrow. I'm sure he'll struggle getting through it. And I don't mean that to be fun of him. Like, it's just, it was already starting yesterday.
There's a lot of things that make me, I'm a bonus dad, but there's a lot of things that like make me want to embrace being a father. The whole bringing the kids to college thing ain't one of them. Oh, the amount of work for that with no payoff.
Well, and there was a little bit of a drive involved, and he needed a rental of some kind because didn't have enough space to move all his stuff. So anyway, that's interesting. He'll be back with us tomorrow. But Tiger fans, 248-539-9797 is the telephone number. With this team, what is your prevailing emotion that comes with how this team is playing right now? Are you excited? Are you elated? Are you pissed? Are you frustrated? Where are you at when it comes to your emotions with this Tiger team? Are you actually living and dying by every single game? Do you allow yourself to live and die by every single series or every week, every pitch? Where are you with this? 248-539-9797. Same number to Texas if you want to get through that way. This is 97.1. All right, so what a difference a week makes when it comes to the Detroit Tigers. Last week, we were getting ready to go into the big series against the White Sox, going into the weekend. And the Tigers were one of the hotter teams in baseball. They were like 8-2 over the last 10 games. Then they get swept by the White Sox. They split the first two games here with Pittsburgh. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games. And yet they find themselves in a very similar situation. They're 4.5 games out of first place in the division. But they're also in fourth place in the division because that's how tight things are. The Twins are in second place, 4 games back. And the Tigers and the Guardians are at 4.5 back. And then Kansas City's 13 back. Then you look at the wild card standings. And the third wild card place belongs with the Texas Rangers with a 62-64 record. So under 500 for the final spot. Then they are followed by the Twins and the Blue Jays a half game behind them. And then the Guardians, Orioles, and Tigers are all 1 game behind them. And then Seattle is 3 games behind. Although after you lose 22-0, I feel like you should maybe be 8 games behind.
Yeah, I think that's
a bigger penalty for that.
That's going to leave a mark.
We'll get into that story later because that's a wild one. But this is where they're at. They're still very much in competition for a playoff spot. They're still in competition for the division spot. Okay, the White Sox series, that hurts. And I know you are troubled by that series. That triggered you as a fan.
No, it did. Look, I'm excited about today's matchup, too. Last 2 years, number one prospects doing battle today, Jobe and Skeens. But I really lost a lot of my will for this season with the White Sox. I was so amped up for that series. I wasn't thinking the Tigers were going to sweep them. I kept saying to myself, shut up to all the people saying, if they sweep the White Sox, you're going to be in first. You're not going to sweep the White Sox, but win the series. We said it all last week, you and I, that, you know, go win two out of three, both series. To get swept kind of killed a lot of my juice for the season, to the point where in this Pirates series, instead of watching all of the games, I'm watching three or four innings of the games. And Gator, what can you offer me to be back in on this team, hook, line, and sinker? Because I feel like the second wild card winner is essentially the biggest loser in the American League at this point. I find myself having some seller's remorse about Casey Mize, not Tarek Skubal. I feel like they need Casey Mize on this team. I feel like I was wanting them to keep Casey Mize on this team, and I'm upset that they didn't. And I'm just kind of, I'm feeling listless about this team right now.
Well, I think this is a playoff team. I think they're a playoff caliber team for sure, but I think there's a lot of teams in the American League that are in the same boat, as is evident by all these teams that are competing for that last spot. I hope they get that last spot, and I don't care which wild card spot it is. If it's the last wild card spot, I don't care. Get in there, because the experience is valuable. I when I was younger, and you heard the term about experience matters, and I'm like, no, it doesn't. That's a myth. It's crap or whatever. And as years go on, you realize, no. As you get more experienced, you realize the experience matters. And for a team that has this many rookies on it right now contributing, I think it would be incredible if they were to get to the postseason to gain some of that experience, so that when this team is ready to really compete for a World Series, when they've got this roster filled out the way it needs to be that competitive, that they can do it, because they've already have the knowledge of what it means to play in a postseason. As far as, you know, what has to happen here, I'm not going to tell you how to feel. I'm not in that business to tell people how they should feel. I'll tell you how I feel and why I'm excited about this. It's because this is a young team, a very young team, and they're playing a brand of baseball that's attractive. Aside from last night, they typically hit the ball very well. They spray it to all fields. They hit the ball out of the ballpark. They have great team speed. They've played better team defense in the second half than they did in the first half. Their pitching staff is normally pretty good. I like this brand of baseball. This brand of baseball plays, and they should add to this team and make them better. But what I really like about this team is that they've been plotting their way to get here. They're not doing it by going off on these crazy runs and these crazy streaks. They've just been very, very methodical. Go out and win a series. You know, here they are on the road where they won seven straight road series. Got a chance here again. If they win this afternoon, it'll be eight. And this is just what they do. They're winning two out of three games, or they're winning six out of 10 games. But it's that same pace. It's slow and steady. This is the tortoise and the hare. And right now they are the tortoise. They're not the hare. And I think that's important to keep in mind, because it helps you look more at the big picture as opposed to living and dying every single game with this team.
What you mentioned about, you know, the value to the team, I can't argue with that one iota. I'm more selfishly thinking about it from my own fan perspective. You open the season with World Series aspirations, and now I feel like you're telling me to get excited about scraps, about an appetizer. Where's the main course? I feel like I've been punched in the gut with this team, and then I'm looking at the roster and I'm looking at the pitching staff, and so you make it to the playoffs, something you've already done. Are you going to win a round? No, most likely not. I tend to be the positive guy, and I feel like, I don't know, man.
Well, they were the underdog the last 2 years in the first round of the playoffs, and they won each round. So what's different about this one?
No Skubal.
It's the same thing.
No Skubal, no Mize, very little starting pitching.
But it's a better lineup, perhaps.
Too many injuries. You know, like, it's Riley Green went down at the wrong time. That White Sox series took so much out of me, man. I mean, I went into that at a 10-level fever pitch. Here we go again. The cardiac Tigers, here we go. Gritty Tigers. And then it stripped a lot of the joy from me.
Well, there are some cautionary tales to be told, and I do have one massive cautionary, I'm not going to get too look too far ahead. I'll get to that coming up in 8 minutes. Let's get to the phones, 248-539-9797. Dan is in Detroit. Dan, welcome to 97.1.
Hey, morning, guys. First-time caller. Appreciate you having me on.
Thanks, Dan.
Hey, I just wanted to call in a couple things, man. You know, I think both you gents have great points. For me, I think the straw that broke my back was the stock series as well. It was kind of the last straw for me. But I do think you bring up some really great points as far as, you know, how young this team is and how it would be beneficial for them to gain that experience in the postseason, whether it's just first round or not. And kind of build off that. That's the silver lining. But it's just, you know, for me as a fan, after that Sox series, I just kind of, you know, I've moved on. I'm looking forward to the Lions, you know, looking forward to their season. And we'll see how next season pans out for the Tigers. And then the other thing I just wanted to add, just a caveat, I could definitely feel, you know, I dropped my son off last week for college. He's going to play football at a, you know, small D3 in New York, and we're super excited about him, super proud. But man, that was rough. You know, you spend 18 years teaching them how to live without you, but then nobody teaches you how to live without them once they're gone. It's rough,
man. Is this your first kid going to college?
So yeah, it's our first kid. You know, I joined the military back when I was 17. Man, I was dumb. I quit school and I joined the Navy, and it changed my life forever. So super, you know, super appreciative of that. So, but yeah, he's our first going to college, and you know, we're a tight knit family, and you know, it's almost like a death. I know that's super dramatic, but. Wow. I've never experienced, you know, I've done, you know, 5 deployments to Iraq. I've done a lot of stuff in my life, and I have no emotions to describe, you know, what we went through. And of course, you know, going through football camp, whether it's D3 or D1, you know, I mean, it sucks. And he's like, oh, I made it, you know, I hate it. I don't know if I love football. I'm like, oh, well, you made a commitment. So
I'm no therapist here, Dan. I'm no therapist here, Dan. But I would say that I hope that you're able to separate the feelings you had when you had to go away from the feelings that your son having to go away. It's not the same going away.
Very, very true. Right?
I mean, when you went away, and thank you for your service.
I think that's what he's doing.
Yeah, there was a chance that you weren't coming back, and thank God you did. Your son will be back in, you know, for Thanksgiving or whatever break is going on. You know what I mean?
Right.
But good luck to you, and thanks for sharing. Appreciate that.
But he brings up an interesting point, you know, about the transition fans make from baseball season to football season. And I guess, Gator, I'm kind of there. You know, like I'm in my mind, I am shifting into Lions mode now, away from Tigers mode there. You're still firmly in the Tigers mode category.
248-539-9797. This is 97.1. All right, so I said one of the cautionary tales I'm going to say about this is that even though I am optimistic this team will make the playoffs, and I'm not living inning by inning or game by game with this team, I go more series to series because I think it's important that he keep the perspective there that winning 2 out of 3 is the goal. You know, sweeping is not the goal. 2 out of 3, keep moving along, keep playing better baseball than the others are playing. 2 out of 3 baseball is great baseball. If you can do that. So was I shook by the White Sox series a little bit, but not as much as you were, not as much as to the point where I'm it's a getting off point for me. Where I am concerned is that you look ahead at the schedule, they've got the game against Pittsburgh today, and then they've got 3 more over the weekend at Kansas City before they return home on Monday. And then things get tough. They've got a 6-game homestand, and it starts with Tampa Bay, and then the Dodgers come to town. So that's 6 tough games. And then they leave to play on August 31st, 3 games at Minnesota, and then it's 4 games against the Guardians, including a doubleheader on Friday. So that's another 7-game road trip they're going to have. And then they return home on Labor Day to take on Minnesota again for three more games. So that's a bit of a gauntlet when you're looking at a 13-game stretch there against teams that, you know, you've got obviously out of division, out of league, tough teams like Tampa and the Dodgers. And then you've got in division games against teams that you are competing with, that you're all the same record basically with Minnesota and Cleveland. It's not easy. And when all that is said and done, it's going to be September 9th. I think at that point, you should have a pretty good idea where this team is. Either they're going to be same spot where they're at right now, just a game out of that, you know, wild card spot. Maybe they're in the wild card spot. Maybe it's up to two games out. They'll still have a chance. Or they're going to find themselves a good distance out of it because they've just lost too much in that. I don't think we're going to look at it the other way and say, oh, look what they've done. They solidified themselves. Now they've got a little bit of a cushion. And I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it's going to be a tough stretch of games, and that's why I think today's game is so important. The games at Kansas City this weekend are vitally important because it's the Kansas City series before that threw me. It was that four-game series that they split when KC did not have Bobby Witt Jr., and the Tigers couldn't win three out of four against a team that was without its heart and soul. And that's when I had dropped them. Not dropped them from the year, but that solidified the point that I said, you got to sell. You got to trade. Absolutely, your trading school, which I thought all along. But you got to now go ahead, trade Casey Mize. Don't have a problem with it. In fact, trade Gleyber Torres if you can. Finnegan if you can. Let's go ahead and sell those, trade those guys. And I still wanted them to go out and buy some bullpen arms that were under team control for years. So that wouldn't make sense if these players were available. And there were a couple guys who were available. They didn't go that route. Whatever. But Kansas City, in the back of my mind, is one of these teams like, you got to do it.
Right. No Bobby Witt, right?
And now you're going to have him on the road, but you're getting into the end of August here. It's getting to must-win time.
I was at that last Kansas City game. That was a punting point to me. The next series against the Orioles, the blown 7-0 lead, that was a punting point. You've got five series here. You got to win three of the next five series. You can't get swept in any of them. And if we define being still in it as being within two games at the end of this, will they still be in it after the end? I lean no.
248-539-9797, the telephone number, same number to text if you want to get to us that way. Let's go to Fred in West Bloomfield. Fred, welcome to 97.1.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
All right, Fred.
The Tigers, you know what? You take them with a grain of salt, and they're probably about the same spot they were in before the White Sox series. They actually gained the game on them since they got swept by them. You know, so I mean, it's the Tigers are the Tigers. If they get hot, you better watch out for them. If they don't, they're probably not going to make the playoffs. They're probably going, lose a bunch of games and be done. You know, so this team is not a team that you can, really figure out, and you just take them for however they're playing at that moment, And, they come back, who'd have thought, after beating Cleveland and winning that series, they come back and get swept by the White Sox. I didn't think they were going to get swept. I thought they would probably win two out of three. But, you just take them for however they're playing. If they, like I said, if they get hot, they can cause some trouble if they make the playoffs. But I really don't know, because you just mentioned that tough schedule that's ahead of them, the Dodgers and all those guys, Tampa Bay, they're going to struggle, I think, and I think that's going to be the deciding factor with the season, that stretch of games against those tough teams. So I just, it is what it is, and if they win, I'm all for them. I'm a Tiger fan, but I'm not expecting anything from them.
All right, thanks a lot, Fred. Yeah, it's going to be tough. And looking ahead at the White Sox schedule, what they have left, they've lost two in a row to the Cubs. They play the Cubs this afternoon for the final game of that series. They have a game tomorrow against Atlanta that's a makeup game, and then their schedule is lighter than what the Tigers is. They've got three against the Mets, three against Texas. All those are at home. Texas doesn't seem like it's a team that's really fighting there. Then they're at Minnesota and at Houston, and it's a total of seven games on that road trip, four of them at Houston. That could be telling for the White Sox, right? How good are the White Sox? Because you got Minnesota who's chasing them, and then you've got Houston who is fighting to stay on top and keep their division status alive in the AL West, and then they come home and play three against Minnesota as well. So in that same stretch, it looks like the White Sox have the easier schedule, and yet they're still going to play some tough games against teams that are really still in this dogfight. And this is where I say, and I thought it was going to matter going into the series against Chicago last weekend, that experience was going to matter. I thought the White Sox, being an inexperienced team, a young team with a new manager, thought that this was going to be tough for them, and yet they prevailed. They took it to the Tigers, who are also a very young team, but have a much more experienced manager. So it's baseball. I love baseball. This is one of the reasons I love it, and why I love the 162 game schedule, because it is so long, but it matters. I mean, it's the middle of August and it matters. Everything still matters. For years, we begged to have meaningful games in September.
Well, we got to raise the bar around here. I got to tell you this, 5 easiest schedules the rest of the way in MLB. This makes you cringe as a Tigers fan. Minnesota, Chicago, Toronto, Seattle, and Cleveland. Oh, boy. There's exactly one team that you're chasing that has a harder schedule than you do. Detroit's right around middle of the pack difficulty. It's Texas. And that's it. So you've got a tough road to hoe. Those 16 games that you mentioned, you got to go 9-7, in my opinion, in those 16 games. You got to have post a winning record in those 16 games to still, in my opinion, be in it the rest of the way.
I'm not going to disagree with that. I think as long as you have a winning record over a stretch like that, that you should be probably at least in this same position you're in now, before things lighten up a little bit. They've got games against Colorado. It really doesn't lighten up, man. Their schedule is not easy. Like Colorado, at Toronto, at the White Sox, home against Washington, a home against Pittsburgh to finish up the this season. It's not easy, but that's why, again, I think baseball is fun, because it's not supposed to be easy. Matt is on a sell. Matt, welcome to 97.1. Hey, Matt.
Yeah, what's up, Gator? What's up, Mark? So, for me, the Tigers team, if I'm like a teeter-totter, because I buy in, then I buy out, and then it's back and forth. I do think that they'll make the playoffs. I don't have any big expectations. And then, Mark, the 5 teams you named with the easiest schedules, Seattle I'm not really worried about.
Fair.
Since they got blown out last night 22-0. Yeah, I watched that game. That game was crazy. Seattle
1-0 in the fifth inning. It was 1-0 in the fifth inning.
The last 4 innings, 21 runs came in. So I don't know what they were doing. I buy in and buy back out. Right now I'm at my buyout stage. I'm like, all right, well, I'm giving up. But I'm sure at some point in the future I'll buy back in. Because, like I said, I do think they'll make the playoffs. But my expectations for them to, do the World Series is almost non-existent. But it is just fun to watch them play.
Yeah, it's and thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Matt. A lot of work to be done. It's not going to be easy, and frankly, if you're going to make the playoffs, you should have to earn your way in there. We've seen this team back into it like they did last year. Frankly, in 2006, when they went to the World Series, they backed into the playoffs at the end of that season. They didn't win the division because they just kept losing towards the end there, but they were guaranteed a playoff spot. But then it just matters being in the playoffs, because even though that team backed in 2006, they went to the World Series. Even though the team backed in last year, they made it to damn near got to the ALCS. One run away from doing that in a fifth game against Seattle. 248-539-9797 is a telephone number. Same number to text if you'd like to get through that way as well. Other questions about this team. Do they have stars? Mark heard something, perked his ears up. I go, oh, I'm sorry. What did you say? Thought it was very interesting. And I have a question also about the youth on this team. Buying or selling? We'll talk about it next year. 97.1. So the Tigers lineup is out for today's game, as they get ready to take on Paul Skeens and the Pittsburgh Pirates today, which is kind of interesting. Jackson Jobe and Paul Skeens. two young pitchers that have a ton of upside. Skeens obviously has realized it quicker than Job has. He's very accomplished at college. First player taken in the draft for good reason. God, is he talented, and shows up on the scene a couple years ago.
Ended my school in the national championship game.
Yeah. He's incredible. Absolutely incredible. And everybody's following him. And then, oh, by the way, oh, you're dating Livy Dunn. There you go. And you know, everybody's seeing that. And he has this rookie of the year, and the Cy Young season last year, everything, right? And I mean, people were even here in Detroit were talking about Tigers should trade for Paul Skeens. I'm like, why on earth would Pittsburgh trade away Paul Skeens? They got the guy this young in his career. They have him under control for years. They don't have to worry about that. And now Paul Skeens is running into some trouble. He's not pitching as well.
He's got mechanics issues right now.
He's got all types of issues because he says it's mechanics, and yet he's not throwing the ball anywhere near as hard as he used to. Now, is that because of mechanics or something else going on? I don't know. But he's not the same that he was. He used to be this stalwart, get into the seventh inning, no problem. In the last couple of games, he's gone five innings, and four innings. He just doesn't have it like he used to. And it's a real problem. In the first month of the season, he was great. 1.62 ERA. Then the ERA jumped up to 2.87 in May. Then to 3.58 in June. 6.25 earned run average in July. And it's 10 innings, and he's given up four earned runs here in August. And he'll go against Jackson Jobe. It's going to be fun to watch. I think it was safe to say, and probably still is, even though he's had some bumps in the road this year, Paul Skeens is a star player, right? I think he's a star player. I don't think we're breaking new ground there. But the Tigers lineup, as I work my way down, Colt Keith is leading off, and he's the DH. Gleyber Torres at second base, hitting second. Kevin McGonigal, shortstop, hits third. Dylan Dingler's back in the game again, playing a catcher, hitting fourth, trying to get out of his slump. Brett Callahan, the rookie, hit his first home run of his career.
He's been fun, right?
Yeah, he's been a lot of fun. He's hitting fifth in right field, or I should say in left field. In right field, batting sixth is Zach McKinstry. And this was the moment where you sent your show sheet over, and I looked at this, and I'm like, okay, I'm curious. It's, somebody said this to you about Zach McKinstry? You overheard this?
Oh, right. I was watching a Twitter clip, and I'm trying to remember the source of it. But somebody I'm not familiar with seeing was sitting down with Zach McKinstry, and they referred to him as Tiger star Zach McKinstry. And I was just thinking to myself, okay, the word love is overused, must win is overused. How overused is the word star? If even just to compliment the player you're interviewing, you are throwing out star. Now, then again, he made the All-Star team last year, won a Silver Slugger for utility men. That's got to be one of the most forgiving All-Star game berths in the history of the All-Star game for Zach McKinstry to be named a star. And I found myself asking the question, what is a star and how many of them do the Tigers actually have? And here's where I landed. They have one, and it could be Riley Green, because my criteria is you got to do it for multiple years. I got to see what Kevin McGonigal is next year, mm-hmm. what Dylan Dingler is next year, what Troy Melton is next year. It's trending in the right direction, but if you want that distinction, as Dennis Green would say, go ahead and crown their ass. I can't do that right now. I need consistency over a multi-year period. And then even with Riley Green, I was just sharing with you, ESPN didn't have him in their top 50 players. So is a star a non-top 50 player? I either have one star on the Tigers or none right now.
Now, to be fair, ESPN had two Tigers in a top 15 on that right. list, but they don't meet your criteria because they've only done it for this year. Although you could argue Dingler did a little bit last year. He was the Gold Glove winning catcher. And then this year the offense has come, although he's in a slump right now. It's interesting. I look back at Zach McKinstry from last year. In April, he hit .338 last year in April. Got all that buzz. The Tigers got a ton of buzz as a team. Then he hit .200 in May. But then he hit .321 in June. So now that's 2 out of 3 months where he was lights out good. Then the voting gets shut down. And he's an all-star with injuries or whatever. He's in the all-star game. Hit .216 in July. Hit .233 in August, hit .241 in September and hit 172 in the postseason.
Oof.
You know, things calmed down significantly. This year, it's been a rough go for Zach McKinstry, but lately he has played well. In the month of August, he's hitting 304 with an 809 OPS. He has found his place, the plate, much better. Even in July, he hit 240, which isn't anything great, but it beats the hell out of hitting like 170 or whatever he was hitting before that. Just for, you know, more reference point on what Zach McKinstry's at. And no, he's not a star. Let me say that. He is not. He was actually an all-star last year, but he's not a star player. I've had my ups and downs watching him as a fan. I think he's a guy that fills out one of your last roster spots because he does have the versatility to play anywhere. He gives you everything he's got. He's got great speed on the paths. He takes first to third, and he has occasional pop. I don't dislike McKinstry. I dislike the situations where I'm seeing him play almost every day because I don't think he should play every day, but that's a whole other issue. When it comes to star players, it's interesting. I can't disagree that you have to do it for more than one season. You can't just be this flash in the pan guy. Now that we're into August and I'm seeing what Kevin McGonigal is doing, and when you see Kevin McGonigal comparisons, and you brought these up too, when you start making a Kevin McGonigal comparison, say he's the first player since blank to do blank, and the comparison is Ty Cobb or Al Kaline, you know, or pictures of black and white players, you know, the black and white photo you see, it's hard not to. When you look at his, I don't believe in the WAR stat as much as everybody else does. I think it's fine, but I think it overemphasizes some things and not enough for others, whatever. But if you buy into WAR, he's one of the top players in the American League. Is he a star as a rookie? I don't think he's a star yet. And I lean more towards what you said because he's got to do it for multiple years. Because he's a rookie, I'm probably penalizing more than anything else.
There's a reason the sophomore slump exists, right?
Yeah, and because he's playing, is he a shortstop? Is he a third baseman? What is he? Fair enough, but I think that does play against him. Dylan Dingler, on the other hand, won the Gold Glove last year. And this year, he's turned himself into the best catcher in baseball, even with the troubles he's had over the last, you know, 2 weeks of hitting the baseball. But he's a different story because he is the best player at his position, not just in the league, but in the game. Even if it's just this one season he's doing it, I think you can't ignore that's a pretty special season he's having. Whereas I could say McGonigal is not the best shortstop in the game, but McGonigal's having a hell of a year. So I think the Tigers, when it comes to your question, do they have stars? I think the answer is yes, but the question I have is it just one? We'll talk more about that next year on 97.1. And welcome back to the Carson Anderson Program. Gator and Mark Ryan in for Doug today. Doug will be back with us tomorrow on the show. Taking your calls and texts at 248-539-9797. Had some texts come in here from Dan from Holly. My primary question is, why do they keep bringing back DeJesus into the bullpen? I've watched many games this year, and it feels like every single time they bring this guy in, he gives up runs. I can't believe they wouldn't be able to find somebody else from AAA. The thing is that they don't have a whole lot of pitching at AAA right now. Bullpen arms. You can look through it, and there's guys that have already gotten their chance here with the Tigers, and they didn't do all that great. There's some familiar names down there that are still struggling. Brant Herder is on a rehab assignment, and he's getting knocked around during his rehab assignment. So, yeah, I don't know.
One of my favorite moments hosting with you is when I was sharing my road rage story, Gator, and we had that moment where we're like, hey, who is the Tigers bullpen arm when you see him in the game? You go, hey!
Where you get upset?
Where you get upset. Your hand's in the air and you're like, not this guy again. You got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I've had those feelings. I'm trying to think who that guy
is. Hey!
It's just offensive to see him come out into the field.
Every time. I was getting there with Will Vest. I really was getting there with Will Vest.
Yeah, I like Will Vest and understanding he was dealing with an injury, and then obviously he's got an injury. It's too bad because he used to be one of the most reliable arms to come out of the bullpen. It's a tougher question. Because I feel like they've gotten rid of those guys.
It changes by the month, though. Like, Drew Anderson was that guy for me, and then he's been better.
But now he's pitched better, yeah. And look, Finnegan is getting to be one of those guys, but I recognize they have to have him. They need him. And it's not like he's got a 7 ERA. His ERA is in the mid-3s, but yeah, please be better. But DeJesus is getting to that point. Yeah, I get it. I mean, it's frustrating. When it comes to... you know, star power on this team. Did they? I think they have one star right now, and it's Dylan Dingler. I think they have a second star in the making with McGonagall for sure. And your point about Riley Green is interesting, because here's a guy who's all-star the last three seasons, and during this time he is the only Tigers outfielder to make three straight all-star appearances, other than Al Kaline. That's it. It's Al Kaline and it's Riley Green to do it three straight years. Riley Green, to me, is a really good player, but I don't think he's a star. I think if he were able to combine what he did last year with this year, you might elevate him to that status, but he's not putting up the power numbers. He had 36 home runs last year. He's got 16 this year. But he's a consistently good player. 816 OPS is good. And it's, by the way, ironically, it's the same OPS that Dylan Dingler has right now. But that's where Dylan Dingler has fallen during his... you know, 3-for-46 slump that he's in. Hopefully he busts out of this, because if the Tigers are going to have any chance moving forward to get to the playoffs, they need Dylan Dingler to be Dylan Dingler again, and they need Riley Green to come back. I think this is a good week not to have Riley Green, because you've got winnable games before the schedule gets tough again next week, and hopefully he's back. But that's that. As far as another star power, I think Troy Melton is trending in that direction as well. Otherwise, there's just a lot of youth that I'm not going to, you know, say that they're star power at this point.
Riley Green, look, he's a guy where if you put a blind resume of him, there's a lot of people we don't put in the Riley Green class that have similar stats to Riley Green. And so he would be the ultimate blind resume guy where you're like, oh, he's only kind of as good as this guy or this guy or this guy. But then you say the blanket statement of he made three consecutive All-Star games, and that kind of blows you away. And it's also why I'm worried about keeping him long-term. How much is he going to cost? He's comparable statistically to kind of run-of-the-mill guys in some senses. And then in other senses, he's got 36 home runs in 1 year and three straight All-Star games.
I think that if I were the time, maybe every extension right now is on hold until they figure out the CBA, and we'll see where it is after next season if they want to go ahead and extend them once they know what the rules are, which is probably the prudent thing to do, because you still have him for a couple more years under arbitration before he hits free agency. Green, Carpenter, and Torkelson, I think, are all that same year after the 2028 season. So you still have a couple more years. But yeah, I hear you, because he's trending in a direction where if he hits free agency, he's likely to get $30 million a year. But if that's the going rate, that's the going rate. And we'll see, again, with the CBA, when the dust clears from that, we're going to have a much better idea of where baseball is, and whether it looks like it's a plan in place that is going to stabilize this game for the next decade, or if this is just going to be unraveled and you can just have haves and have-nots, and then you're hoping the Tigers can be part of the haves, and maybe they are not. 248-539-9797, a telephone number. More text coming in. The Tigers can't win 6 of 10 the rest of the way out and get into the playoffs. They need a run to counter the 6-20 May. That's not true. I mean, right now they're below 500, and so are a bunch of these other teams that are in the wild card hunt, all within a game of each other. In fact, the third wild card team is below 500. If the Tigers play 600 ball the rest of the way, they will in fact be better than 500 the rest of the when the season is all said and done.
You think they get to 500? I mean, this year
they got so close. They got one game, and damn series against the White Sox. I believe our playoff team, so I think they are. But it's my 51. My 51% of me says yes. I just barely leaning over there. It's getting tougher and tougher by the day to get there. I believe trading Skubal was a no-brainer, but on the other hand, my eyes really hurting this team My eyes are really hurting this team. I believe it does say that we're throwing in the white towel, especially without adding any bullpen arms. It's Johnny in Rochester. Toughest thing I had to deal with the trade deadline or to swallow is they didn't add any bullpen arms. I agree with that part of it. Tigers haven't had an everyday third baseman, and Gator here selling hope for a month. LOL. I think they have several candidates who could be an everyday third baseman. I think McGonigal is going to end up being your everyday third baseman long term, because I think Bryce Rainer will be your everyday shortstop.
Yeah, but AJ Hinch has to commit to that though. Well, stop jerking these guys around.
Well, right now it doesn't have to. Bryce Rainer's not here right now, so you don't have to worry about it. So you can play who you have to at this point, and you've got Colt Keith who plays third base. You've got Hau Yuli who's going to play third base today. These guys are trying to get them the reps as much as they can. The Tigers are trying to win games for sure, but I'm not completely convinced that the higher-ups like A.J. Hinch and Scott Harris, I'm not convinced that they're convinced this is a playoff team either. They're still trying to work things out, and they've got time to work things out, and this is the best way to do it. I have no issue with having Kevin McGonigal play shortstop, or if he plays third base, or if Hau Yuli's playing third, or if Colt Keith is playing third. Not right now. Wait till things have to get defined, and I don't have an issue with this right now.
You're right. An amount of experimenting that doesn't indicate that they believe this is a playoff team.
248-539-9797. Joe is in Commerce. Joe, welcome to 97.1.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Good.
That's good. The injury stuff just kills me. When is Riley Green going to get back? Because I'm convinced that Dylan Dangler is being impacted by Riley Green. I mean, up until that point, it seems like Green's been out a little while. Now I can't remember if it lines up perfectly, but I mean, we got to get these guys back. And I don't know what is Riley Green's issue.
They say that he could be back. I believe it was a hamstring strain. He got hit on the leg. And then came around of scoring from first base on a double, I think, by Torkelson. And he kind of tweaked the hamstring around the bases. So it sounds like they expect him to be back soon. So
yeah, do you agree? I mean, I do agree.
Yeah. Dylan Dingler started struggling a little bit before Green got hurt, but it's not helping to not have Riley Green in the lineup and hitting ahead of Dylan Dingler or vice versa. They protect each other. And now the lineup is different every day. Today it's different again with Colt Keith leading off and McGonigal's hitting third. And, you know, they just can't. And I guess Hinch has never really settled on a lineup with this team to begin with since he's been manager, though.
Right. But I just think that there's a direct correlation that he gets back. They get a little bit more, you know, I guess everything's in line. Quit moving the lineup around and give those two guys a chance to feed off of each other. I think they got a chance, but it's they got to get him back because I think Dingler's in trouble if not.
Well, I hope you're right, Joe. I hope that getting Riley Green back unlocks Dylan Dingler and that Dingler gets back to being like the MVP candidate we were talking about him being literally 10 days ago. We talked about him being a possible MVP candidate. 248-539-9797 is a telephone number. I got a question for the critics of the Tigers. I think they may feast on this as well. And then you get the Tiger, the ardent faithful that are also going to react to this question. We'll set this up coming up in 5 minutes. Okay, so when we talk about the Tigers and we say, we've said the last few days here about, is this an entertaining team to watch? And I've really enjoyed this run. And my number one reason for enjoying this run this year is because of the young players. Because we got to see Kevin McGonigal, one of their top prospects, play from day one this season. Because now, it's been a few weeks here, but now we're seeing the other top prospect, Max Clark, the two first-round picks from that year, get a chance to play, and Max Clark looks really good. I love his defensive ability. I like his hustle in the games, and I think that he's taking the right approach. He's very patient right now. He's not jumping on things and being too aggressive. He's not coming in hot, and I think everybody thought he was going to come in hot because he's flashy, has the gold chains, has the eye black, the whole thing, the bandana, and the whole bit. but his look does not match the demeanor, if that makes sense. He seems really calm and really grounded. Love that. And then in the middle of that, you've got guys like Hao Yu Lee and Andrew Valencia and Ben Malgeri. And now Brett Callahan, who, you know, becomes the first Tiger in forever to hit a triple in his first at bat on the first pitch he sees, and then hits his first home run last night. And, you know, this big left-handed hitting guy that just has this big smile on his face the whole time. And, okay, that's another one you get excited about. And Troy Melton and what he's turned into is really cool. And then we're seeing Jackson Jo pitch again today, and hopefully, you know, it's a much better outing than what he had his last time, and more reminiscent of the first outing he had this year just a week ago. The youth on this team gives me reason why I'm excited about it. But I know that there are skeptics out there, right? We've seen this before from rookies and guys that come on and they're you know, an instant sensation, then they die out. You know, whether it's Brennan Bosch or whomever. You know, there's Chris Shelton was another one that got off to a great start and then just, you know, didn't even see him. You know, Rob Fick actually, the Fickster, had a ton of home runs early in his career, and then he fizzled out. They've had a bunch of guys like that looked like they showed promise, and then it just wasn't there. So I understand some skepticism about it. I want to know from the Tiger fans, and from you too, Mark, are you buying into the youth movement? Do you think that this team is set up for years to come because they've got the guys on this team right now? Like, forget the guys we don't know. The prospects are still in the minors, even though I'm really high on a couple of those guys. We're not going to see them for a couple of years. But we're going to see some of them come in next year. Are you buying in to the youth movement on this team and what Scott Harris is building? Or do you think that it's just the Tigers being cheap? Because that's what skeptics will say. The Tigers just being Ilitch's cheap. He's not going to spend the money. You know, after this season's over, they're going to drop $100 million from the payroll after the season. And after next year, you'll have Javi Baez's contract completely off the books as well, and there's another $20 million off the team. It's just where it is. They're just cheap. Or is this a smart strategy to have? And now we're starting to see the fruits of the labor of what Scott Harris is about as a general manager and identifying younger talent when it comes to the draft.
So I am over. The quickest way when I'm on Solo Gator to get run is to do the cheap argument, because they've got a top 10 payroll. They have one of the highest payrolls for a middle market team. They are a middle market team. They did spend money. To call them cheap is to just be lazy and to essentially not know what you're talking about. So that's the quickest way to get run by me, is to call and say, ownership is cheap. No idea what the hell you're talking about. At the same time, if this is the route you're going to go, I need, if they miss the playoffs this year, and the odds are they will, I'm curious if that's a 51-49 for you, I need that to be a blip and not a trend. I need them to be back in the playoffs again next year. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you know, this is a youth movement that's really taking you a step back, and it's going to feel like what a missed opportunity with a team and a core group that was almost there, and now we're starting over again. I don't have the patience in me, and I know a lot of Tigers fans feel the same, to just have another start over, another reboot. But if this can be not a reboot but a reload, not a rebuild but a reload, I'd be down with that.
Do you think it is? And I know I recognize you want the proof of concept, and that's right. Totally understandable. But, you know, doing what we do for a living, we kind of call our shots early on this. We plant our flags, as we say on the show. Do you think that they are in the right direction? Like, obviously they can still make the playoffs this year. That can happen while they are infusing all this young talent.
I believe if Scott Harris is willing to do something he hasn't yet done, which is go out and add a significant piece to the lineup in the offseason, yes, I do. But I do think they're a piece or two away from that. So I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes, this is going to be a playoff team next year, because I believe in the young guys, and I do believe he's going to add something. But I know that there's not a lot of hope from Tigers fans that he will, because he hasn't. But the cheap notion has got to be flushed.
Yeah, I agree. It's not a cheap thing, but I think some people are going to say that because, you know, they're skeptical and they're snark, and they don't like the way Ilitch is running this team, and want to get back to the World Series, and you're not going to do it with a bunch of rookies. 248-539-9797. Dan is in Ypsilanti. Dan, you're next up here, 97.1.
Hey, thanks. I don't know if I'd go with cheap, but I think I might go with unserious about building a contender. I mean, if he goes out and gets, the missing mythical right-handed bat and a couple of real bullpen arms, then it's like, yeah, okay, well, I see what we're doing. This is all going to work out. But if he goes out and doesn't change the lineup, even though it's the same lineup, it's different, right? Or just keeps expecting rookies to come up and doesn't spend money or does the bargain bin, piecemeal stuff, then, it is what it is. And we're not as serious about competing than some other franchises.
So with the right hand, the mythical right handed bat, as you said, what if that's found in Andrew Valencia? What if that's what he is? He's gotten off to his amazing start in just a few weeks. He is destroying left-handed pitching. He's destroying most pitching, but specifically left-handed pitching. Can he be that guy?
I think that we've gotten very, very lucky that some of the call-ups and rookies this year have been as good as they are. I don't think anybody expected McGonagall to be a 5-WAR player. And if you say that you did, you are Kevin McGonagall, which is nice, I guess. But I want to see somebody with an established track record instead of just banking on a bunch of rookies or unproven platoon guys making it work, because that didn't work this year with McKinstry and Vierling and Jones.
So you don't buy into the youth movement then?
I buy into it, and as long as he bolsters it with additional pieces and free agents or trades or something real.
Nailed it, Dan.
Yeah, and thanks for the call, Dan. And the problem is, Mark, is that we don't know what the offseason is going to hold because of the CBA. This is a weird offseason. And when addressing this, I try to distance that and say, okay, let's throw out the CBA talk. Let's just assume it's a normal offseason in baseball. If it's a normal offseason in baseball, I agree with that because this team has to rebuild the bullpen. They don't have one. And I think they have to get serious about that. And that's where they need to spend the money. They probably also need to go out there and get another starting pitcher. Framber Valdez is, it's hit or miss with him, and you need to be way more hit than miss, and unfortunately it's becoming more of a 50-50 mix than a 60-40 mix, and that's not good enough. And this is, I think it's Scott Harris's Achilles heel, is identifying free agent pitchers. He hasn't been able to do it. He's been able to trade, and that's fine, and he's been able to identify talent in the draft, and that's fine. Minor leaguers have definitely been developed, but when you get to the offseason and you see the Tigers have signed free agent pitcher blank, I'm like, oh, no.
With every year there being an Alex Cobb, every year there being a Justin Verlander, a $10-plus million pitcher, an eight-figure guy who is not even playing for this team. So again, in my opinion, you just mentioned Achilles heel. I did something to my Achilles heel on Friday. Wasn't good. I need him to stop saying blocking players. You need some help in the lineup. You got to have some help in the lineup. It'd be great. They may not need a pitcher if Reese Olson comes back to form, but if you're giving me the BS line of didn't want to add a bat because we're blocking players, my patience is done with that.
Well, but I don't know how many guys he's done with it. I don't think that we've heard him say that too much this year. They've given these guys a chance.
He just said it about the bullpen. Why didn't you go get a bullpen guy? Didn't want to block the...
He said it about a bullpen?
Promise you.
Nobody in the bullpen you're blocking.
I promise you. In his press conference that he just did after the deadline. That was the last question, and it was the question that pissed me off the most, because it was like, why didn't you go get a bullpen arm? The price is number one. Didn't want to block other guys number two.
248-539-9797 is a telephone number. Same number if you want to text as well. As we continue here on the Carson Anderson program, Doug will be back tomorrow. Mark Ryan with us today. We've got Tiger baseball coming up at 12:10. Tigers and Pirates, that first pitch coming around 12:35 with Paul Skeens on the hill against Jackson Job. That sounds like it could be a really, really interesting matchup. We'll get into some of the stuff going on with the Lions as well and continue to take your calls and texts at 248-539-9797. This is 97.1. So yesterday we had the, I think it was the ESPN story that came out and had the ranking of the NFL teams 1 to 32, who has the brightest future, and kind of looking at the years 2027 to 2029, those three seasons there, who's got their window of opportunity here? And the Lions ranked third, which I thought was a little bit higher than where they should have been, but I understand why they had it there. I think there are a couple teams definitely I'd have ahead of Lions, and I think the Lions are in this second tier of teams that I could see them anywhere from, say, 5 through 10, something like that. And yet they were at 3. And I understand the reason for hope that the window is here, because they've got the quarterback that settles things down, even though he's not dynamic with his feet. He's incredible with what's between his ears, and he gets the ball where it has to be. Throws 30 touchdowns, 4,500 yards, book it. That's what he does. At least it's what he's done for the last 3 years. He's done that. They've got weapons around him. All these the weapons are young. It's not like St. Brown, Jahmyr Gibbs, and Jamison Williams and Sam Laporta are old guys. These are younger players, and three of those guys are signed long term. And Laporta probably gets a deal after this season or during the season. And they've got the best left tackle in football. There's reason to be optimistic about the offensive side of the ball, the defensive side of the ball. They've locked in Jack Campbell and Aiden Hutchinson. I think they have the right coach with the right mentality. And this year, I like how they've gone about more business-like approach this year after failing to make the playoffs last year. They're pissed about it. They got a giant chip on their shoulder and go do it. Now, there's holes in this team for sure. But based on the signings that they've made, re-signing their own guys who would be free agents, that's the philosophy they've gone with. And I know a lot of people don't love that because they like the bright, shiny things that are players from other teams that people covet because they're on somebody else's team. The grass is always greener and they want them to spend the free agent money or go after this guy. When the Lions have said, yeah, that's great, but if we did that, we'd create a hole and then we wouldn't have this guy that's on our team. So we would, you know, you're going from one resource instead of just going from your source. I look at this and I don't disagree with the thought that this team is in a window right now. And Brad Holmes doesn't like to use the term windows, and I think that's ridiculous because it is. There are windows of opportunity. But I think it's directly tied to the contract extensions that they've given out. So I think that idea that ESPN has between 2027 and 2029, that's where this window is and that's why they like them, I agree with that because of the contracts. But you asked an interesting question. And that is, are the Lions at the beginning, the middle, or the end of this Super Bowl window, this opportunity to compete for a Super Bowl? And I'm more of the thought that they are at the beginning of this window or close to that. Maybe the beginning already happened a year or two ago. But I think the window is more than just a three-year window. So I still think they're towards the beginning of it, just getting to maybe the middle portion of it where they can compete for a Super Bowl championship, because this team is very talented. They've got, I think it's 6 of the top 88 players in the National Football League based on the NFL 100 list.
I think the biggest reason they're in, I'm going to say not the beginning, but the middle of the window, is because they've done such a good job of keeping that core together. Now, do you think they learned something about extending Kirby Joseph that maybe we want to wait a little bit longer? Like maybe the bill that they're paying for Kirby Joseph, does that mean Sam Laporta is going to have to wait longer because they're worried about his potential health and availability, right? Like we got burned with Kirby Joseph. Sam, you're going to have to wait a little bit longer. It's interesting, these ESPN articles, you got different people writing these articles. A few weeks ago, they came out with the best under 25 talent, and the Lions were 23rd because Kirby Joseph, Sam Laporta, Penne, and Jamison no longer fit the other 25 rankings.
If you're not under the age of 25, then you can't qualify, and they don't have many players in it. But if you look at like 25 to 30, they're flooded.
Right. Absolutely.
It's a young roster.
Absolutely flooded. And then you have this article led by Seth Walder that has the Lions third overall immediate future. I think they're in the middle of their Super Bowl window right now, which makes seasons like last year all the more painful because it feels like it was a lost year right entering the middle of the window.
And injuries will rob you of that opportunity, and of course, bad play does too, and I think it was a combination, but I think injuries were certainly the bigger part of that. So if you think they're in the middle of the window, then how long does this window stay open? When is the end of the window?
I'm going to go 3 years from now.
So the 29 season.
29 season.
And I think that's kind of fair. And I forget when Goff's contract is up, but I think that might be 2030 when he's up. And they're going to have to figure something out at that point. I don't know how long he's going to be playing 3 or 4 years from now, but right now I think he's in the prime of his career. But I think that's fair. And maybe we're splitting hairs here with me saying in the beginning, but I think it's like the end of the beginning towards the middle.
Yeah.
You're in the middle. But where do the people have it at? 248-539-9797 is a telephone number. Or do you think that the Lions are even in the window? Do they even have a window? Are you that disgusted with how things have gone that you're like, this team isn't good enough for it to win a Super Bowl now or in the future? 248-539-9797 is a telephone number, same number to text. Are the Lions at the beginning, the middle, or the end of their Super Bowl window? To the phones we go. Robert is first up in St. Clair. Hey, Robert, welcome to 97.1.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Well, I think they're in the middle of it, but I think they need a different coach. They have an extremely easy schedule coming up. They half of the teams that they play are under 500. Okay, they should win those games. But this coach is not within the top three or four coaches in the NFL. I think you guys would have to agree with that.
Well, great, but you're not going to get one of those other three coaches then, are you?
No, but
why do you want to get rid of the coach?
Well, from the play calling and the chances that he takes, I certainly don't think that he's the caliber coach that our players have right now.
Now, I would disagree. I think Dan Campbell is a very good coach in the National Football League. I think if he were let go by the Lions, he'd have a job tomorrow.
Robert, let me ask you this question. Who is principally responsible for the turnaround the Lions have had?
Well, I would say the general manager.
Okay, so you give the credit to Brad Holmes, none to Dan Campbell.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. You were talking yesterday, and you were talking about how he's learning to become a coach. Okay, learning? We're not here to train a coach. We need a coach immediately because we're in the middle of a
neither one of us said that. So I don't know where you come up with that. Maybe somebody else said on the station. But thanks for the call. No, it's not on the job training anymore, right? I mean, when they first hired him, they gave him the opportunity. They gave him a chance. They saw something that they liked. They got the committee together and they interviewed a bunch of guys. I'm glad Chris Spielman was part of that committee. They loved the energy Campbell had. He had a little bit of run with the Dolphins when he was the interim coach there and had some real positive feedback. And when Dan Campbell came on the scene here, it was interesting to say the least, you know, biting kneecaps and all that in the speeches. And it took a while before it started to pay off, but you could see it. You could see the team and the culture starting to change. And by the end of that first season, it had definitely changed. You get to that second season, and it had absolutely changed. And by the third year, you're winning 12 games. You win the division. You go in a couple playoff games. This team's believing in themselves. They go to a 15-2 season after that. And with all the injuries and whatnot, and then they had a bad game. They had a horrible game in the playoffs against Washington. Can't have a bad game at that time. It's the postseason. It torpedoes everything. And it's exactly what happened. Goff had a terrible game. I could say Ben Johnson had a terrible game with that one. Injuries again last year. I think what we've learned about Dan Campbell is there are things you're going to have to accept with Dan Campbell, and you may not like them. You may not like he's always going for it on fourth down, that he's a gambling man. But if you say that, you have to understand that part of the success of this team is tied into that philosophy. So you can say, I don't like him going for fourth down. Okay, fine. Then you're punting all the time, and guess what? You're probably going to lose some of those games.
The general manager picks the ingredients. The head coach makes the meal. Robert doesn't value the guy making the meal. You still got to put all the ingredients together, make it a cohesive unit, make it a family, achieve buy-in from the players that you have. Dan Campbell has done all of that. Is he without fault? No. But Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell are 1A and 1B as being principally responsible for the Lions going from a laughingstock to a legitimate contender year after year?
Yeah, they've definitely, I mean, look, I'll give you an instance where Dan Campbell coached this team up with Jared Goff. Jared Goff was a bit of a reclamation project because I think he was shattered by what happened with the Rams, that Sean McVay had given up on him, cast him aside, thrown him under the bus, ran him over with that bus, and then had to come back to him and say, hey, I know we did that to you, but we need you to play this playoff game. I know it's just a week after surgery on your hand. Can you do us a favor? And he goes out and he wins the playoff game. And then he still gets cast aside. And they end up trading him to the Lions as part of the staff.
Blindsided him in the main side.
Yeah. Gets traded here. And at that time, nobody wants to come to Detroit. And nobody knows what's laying in wait with Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes. They don't know. And that first season was a rough season for the first few games. And Dan Campbell had a heart-to-heart with Jared Goff about, hey, we're going places, but we're not going to go anywhere unless you get better. We have to get you to be a better player. And from that moment on, Jared Goff played at a much higher rate. That's coaching players up. Now, is he the best coach in the National Football League? Nope. But he is, I think he's probably in that second tier of coaches, maybe at worst the third tier of coaches, but not to the point where I'm looking to replace him.
He's not the problem. He's not the thing standing in the way of you and winning a Super Bowl.
I don't think he is, but I think people might think that. Some people do. 248-539-9797 is the telephone number. Are you in the beginning stage, the middle stage, the end stage, or no stage and thinking that this team has a Super Bowl window? 248-539-9797. This is 97.1. Talking about the Lions' window of opportunity to win a Super Bowl. Yesterday, ESPN thought the Lions ranked third when it came to, you know, teams that have this window, that they're going to be a force in the future in the years 2027 to 2029. I think when you sync up everything with all the contracts that they've given out, the extensions they've given out to keep this core group together, this is why we say there's a window. Brad Holmes doesn't like the term window. We do. So we'll talk about
that. I think he feels like that corners him.
Yeah.
Right. And but the decisions he's making show that he believes he's in a quote unquote window of opportunity, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, why would they be making the decisions they're making to ensure that their core is all re-upped at the same time?
Yeah. The tough job for him, and you're right, it's about painting himself in a corner, is that at some point you're going to have to start to transition and look to the future beyond the guys you give an extension to. At some point, there's going to be life without Jared Goff, life without Jahmyr Gibbs. And you don't want to have to say, okay, now we're going to have to revisit how to rebuild this team. You'd like to be able to say you just like Ohio State or Georgia, you just reload, like what college football is like. And you know, we'll see if they get to that point. And I guess that's why he doesn't want to look at, it could be why he doesn't look at windows, but we do. We like the windows. We like talking about the windows. So are they at the beginning of this Super Bowl window, the middle, or the end? And when we say Super Bowl window, it's the opportunity to compete for a Super Bowl, legitimately compete. And I think this, you know, it's funny because this window has been open for a little bit here. They literally got to the NFC Championship game just a few years ago. And then they had a 15-2 season. But then last year happened. And really, it's the injuries they've suffered over the last 3 years that have just been devastating to the team. And, you know, in large part, the team that ends up winning that trophy at the end is the team that was able to survive injuries. And nobody, the Lions are not using an excuse. I do. I'll say, and it's more of a, to me, it's a reason. It's not an excuse. I think you can be honest about it and say, yeah, losing your star pass rusher, that affects things. Losing your star defensive tackle, that's going to affect things. Losing your two all-pro safeties, that's going to affect things. But how do you get past that? And that's why this year is really important, because they're going to have to get past the safety issue. They're going to have to get past the fact that they're on paper right now, their secondary looks like mung. And maybe that's being a little harsh, or maybe it's being kind, however you want to look at it, but it doesn't look all that impressive.
Well, I think what's really interesting is the national difference between, you know, nationally, not many are considering the Lions to be a contender this year. Yeah, I've seen a couple people list him as a sleeper, but nobody's expecting much nationally. That couldn't be more opposite to what is going on in our city here, which is where, you know, I think there's going to be a verdict rendered on this core after this year if they don't achieve their potential. Fans have had enough of the injury reason or the injury excuse. I get the sense in this city, it really is put up or shut up time in 2026.
Yeah, I think it is too. And I thought the Free Press had an interesting headline to an article today that said, can the Lions survive the injury to Cade Mays? When you talk about the center who's going to miss the first probably, I don't know, five, six, seven games of the season as he recovers from a wrist injury. And it's a legit question to ask. Because it's all part of this season that we have high hopes for. I had somebody ask me the other day, you know, win total, where do you think they're at? And I'm like, I have a hard time saying anything other than 12-5.
I was there before the Cade Mays news.
I'm still there because I think the start of the season, it's still, fortunately for the Lions, and this is all on paper, of course, it favors the Lions because they're playing teams like New Orleans and Carolina and Arizona. I forget what the fourth team is in that mix. That it seems like it's a...
New Orleans, Jets, Carolina,
Jets,
Arizona.
Jets are the other team. And then, of course, they play Buffalo in that second game of the year. But, I mean, does that still look like it's 4-1? Kind of. Like, I'm not scared of what they have in Carolina. And that might be the biggest test outside of Buffalo. But we'll know a little bit more this week with the preseason game they have, and just to look at the offensive line and see how it looks. I don't have any concerns about the star players on this team. I have concerns about the offensive line, which I think the headline of that article was interesting. And surviving the injury to Cade Mays means getting to the sixth game or seventh game of the season, and hopefully that your team is, after seven games, that they're 5-2.
At worst, 4-3, right, still afloat.
Yeah, but they're ready to roll once they get him back. But, of course, injuries are a large part and will play a role with everybody else on the team. Some text coming in. Can we say 35% of the window? Not quite the beginning, not entirely the middle. Dom from Holly. I mean, I guess if you want to throw that percentage at it, sure. But that's kind of where I'm at. It's not quite the beginning. It's not quite the middle. It's somewhere in between there. Mark is more in the middle. I'm more towards the beginning, but... Yeah, I think we're basically in the same area. I do like the idea that, okay, does this window start to close in 2029? Maybe. I believe the turnover is year to year, that the window is year to year. That's from Flea on a Roof. Except that the turnover in players, they not from the core.
No, the core is there. It's the core is locked in. Yeah, it's when you have that core... Your window is elongated, but this is a critically important season, and the schedule couldn't line up better for him. Critical, right,
very critical.
There you go. Two most difficult games don't come until the end of the year.
Well, Buffalo in the beginning of the year is going to be tough. But
I mean,
yes.
But back to back games, right? Back to back difficult games at Chicago, at Green Bay. I mean, who could ask for anything more?
Yeah, we'll see how Chicago is.
Ooh, what's your forecast from first to worst?
Gator's never liked ever since Ben Johnson.
Well, I'm exactly the same. Okay. I'm totally the same. I've been vilified for that. And
Gator's worse. Whatever you think you are, I think Gator's worse.
I mean, you know.
The Hammond Bears.
Yeah, the Hammond Bears are, we'll see where they're at. I think the quarterback's awfully talented, but, I mean, he completed less than 60% of his passes last year. I think he plays hero ball too often, and I don't know if he's going to be able to absorb everything that the god of coaching, Ben Johnson, has to offer him over there. I wonder.
The god of coaching may want to focus on that defensive side of the ball just a wee bit.
I wonder if Ben Johnson's just going to get fed up with mistakes if they start to come. But it's a talented roster for Hammond. They look good. The Lions are in the middle of a six-year window. That's Sammy B. I don't believe you can say that the window is because you don't know what the Lions are going to draft or trade for in the next 3 years. Well, I think you can do that without looking at that. I think what does the roster look like right now? Of course, they're going to supplement the roster and complement the roster as the years go by. But for right now, what's the window? Beginning, middle, or end? We've got Tiger baseball coming up shortly. The Tigers and Pirates third game of that series. Paul Skeens and Jackson Job. That should be really interesting. We'll talk a little Tigers next here on 97.1. You heard him say Tiger baseball coming up in less than 10 minutes with our pregame coverage. Tigers and Pirates, Jackson Job on the hill for the Tigers, Paul Skeens for Pittsburgh. Tell you what, if you heard this was going to be the case like last year, you'd be all jazzed up about it.
It's lost a little bit.
It's lost
a little
bit.
Just a wee bit.
Well, I mean, Skeens was given an extra 3 days off because he's struggling through this year a little bit, which is surprising this young in his career and coming off the Cy Young season.
Who's in a better way right now, Job or Skeens?
Skeens.
He's in a better way?
I think so.
He's a mess.
He's not a mess.
Job is just coming back.
Not, I mean, he still has an ERA in the threes. He's not a mess.
Well, so the month by month you were dropping 5 and 6.
I think it was one really bad month in there, and the rest of it's been a little bit better. I don't know. Jackson Job's made 2 starts.
Right.
One of them was fantastic, and the other one, the White Sox could not hit the ball harder against, like, I'm loving watching 100 miles an hour. I love that. I don't love when the exit velocity is 110 miles an hour off of it because the ball is either flat or it's just not located properly.
Jake Rogers had something to do with that.
What? Well, how so? What do you mean?
I just think with look for this.
Oh, I don't buy that.
You don't think he had any effect?
No.
You think it's a coincidence they just signed him right before?
I don't know if it's a coincidence. I mean, if he spends the rest of the season with Chicago, is it a coincidence? I mean, Jake Rogers, one thing Jake Rogers can do is he can handle a staff. And
yeah.
He's good defensively. So he's a good backup catcher to have. He just can't hit anymore.
I think there were some helpful tips from Jake Rogers.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think the teams hit Jackson Job hard before, and the White Sox are a team that can actually hit, and they just took advantage of it. Let's clean up a call on the Lions here. Jonathan is next up here on the self on 97.1. Hey, Jonathan.
Hey, Scott. Hi, guys. Thank you for taking my call. I'm the Lions fan and Nats fan, but I want to talk about the Lions first thing. I talk about the Tigers as well.
Yeah, go ahead, quick.
So I was reading an article on the Lions, and I was watching this guy. He played for Sally's Core Reader. They have him not making the team, which I'm utterly shocked about. He plays the run well. I've seen him play in high school. I'm sorry, say this again.
Who, Jonathan? Who are you talking about? Sailors? Is that what you said?
Tor Reader. I think they're saying he won't
who?
Make the team. Tor Reader, linebacker. He played for the Rams.
Okay, I'm sorry. For the Lions. Okay, I was like, where are you going with this?
Yes, for the Lions. He plays the run very well. I've seen him in high school, but they play at Sally's here in Delaware, and they say he's not going to make the team. I don't agree with that. We need a plethora of linebackers, I think. Defense wins championships, in my personal opinion. So I think we need to keep him.
Yeah, I think they have a lot of linebackers on this team. Actually, it's one of the areas of depth that they have. When they signed Devin White, I got all excited because Devin White is outstanding, was second in the National Football League last year in tackles, just ahead of Jack Campbell, who is one of the young studs in the National Football League, particularly at his position. You know, Derek Barnes and Malcolm Rodriguez had some depth there. They drafted Jimmy Rolder, who unfortunately got hurt, but I guess he's feeling like he's going to feel good enough to get back soon. You know, Reader is a guy who probably at best is going to be special teams.
Troy Reader right now is the third string weak side linebacker, so very much on the cut line.
According to ESPN.com, but yes. Yeah.
It is interesting, the players the fans latch onto, isn't it?
Well, if they have a personal connection with them,
yeah.
If they followed them, that's the way that's going to be. I can understand that. But we haven't heard anything about Troy Reader in training camp. Not that he's been bad, it's just we haven't heard a ton of. And they've got so many other guys that, you know, it's going to have to be a special teams the way that you make the roster. Eric Hunter is a guy that I think that has some upside. They've got Joe Bashy in camp, the former Michigan State linebacker. He's not likely to make the team either, but you never know. Injuries happen, and can you latch on and be part of the practice squad, or do you have a chance because of special teams to make the 53? We'll see.
Who ends up being the best opposite rush end to Aiden? I know you think DJ Wonnum gets the call, but Hassanine, Moore, Wonnum, who's the best rusher?
Well,
among the bunch.
I tell you, they're talking a big game about Tyler Lacy.
Yeah.
that he would be the guy that gets the start. In fact, I think it was the writer for The Athletic, I thought, just had his first crack at the Lions depth chart, and that's what he had, Tyler Lacy, as the opposite end. I still think it's going to be DJ Wonnum, but you're going to have a rotation of players there, and I personally, I hope that Derek Moore is part of that rotation. I hope that he's healthy enough that he can show what he can do, because as a pass rusher, I think he might be the most gifted pass rusher they have outside of Aiden Hutchinson. But it's an area to watch for sure. And we'll see the Lions play on Saturday afternoon against Washington here at Ford Field. And I think they've got an idea. They're going to play a lot of starters in this game. Curious to see which starters do not play. Are they going to play Jared Goff? Are they going to play Jahmyr Gibbs? I think they're going to want to get a look at the offensive line, at least for a series or two.
What do you need to see in the second game? I need to see better coverage, please.
I just need to see, make sure that there's no injuries, I think, is the first and foremost. Every preseason game you look at, I'd like to see Rakestraw play better.
Yes.
I'd like to see Tesla catch the ball. Let everybody remember, wait a minute, this guy can catch. Last week what happened was a fluke. I think those are things I'd like to see.
How about continued playmaking from Keith Abney?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you keep hearing great things about him. And as this training camp is going on, there have been more and more stories about how the defense is playing well. And I'm wondering, when do we start getting concerned about the offense not playing well against this defense? Because it's a double-edged sword when you look at that. Some feedback coming in on the Tigers. Regarding the Tigers, why do we have to buy in or buy out? Why can't you just enjoy the game? Have fun and watch these kids gain experience. If they make the playoffs, good. If they don't, that's fine too. Just watch and love the game. Brandon in the car.
Well, okay. So you gave me hell on Friday about my movie thing. His take, he's able to do micro. I'm not. I'm always looking macro. I don't know how not to look at the big picture. If you can just sit and enjoy a game, good on you. But I need it to be counting towards something. I don't have time to waste my time, right?
Well, I would say this. We're a talk show, and we're going to be talking about this. You can have your own thoughts, and you're locked in. I'm just enjoying the ride, and that's fine. You know. But as a talk show, we're going to bring up points as to what's the hole here, and what are you feeling confident? Are you chesty over this or not? I get it. And by and large, I'm more along the line with Brandon, but no, I think you have to make a decision if you're buying in with what the general manager is putting out there. Are you buying in with the managers? AJ Hinch still getting it done to your satisfaction? Are you tired of seeing certain guys get the call, like out of the bullpen? Like you just mentioned, who's the guy go, hey, you know, who are you offended by when they come out of the bullpen? I think there's lots of legitimate questions when it comes to the Detroit Tigers. Then there's this text. How much are the Tigers missing Riley Green right now? Do they get swept by the Sox if he plays? That's from Austin. Probably not.
I agree with you.
And those games were closer than the results were, but it was what it was. No doubt about it. Mark, thanks for your help.
Thank you, as always.
Appreciate it. We're back on the air tomorrow with Doug Karsh. Tiger baseball next year, 97.1.